As we've already acknowledged, Bishop Gregory is no stranger to this chair in this room. But again, no better person here that could speak to both the history and the importance of the Windsor Continuation Group than Gregory. So we thank you for being here. I don't know if you have any opening comments you wish to make or whether you should write to questions.
I'll just say a few things, I think, about the Windsor Continuation Group report and the Archbishop's presentation. The Windsor Continuation Group existed for 18 months. It's finished its work now, and it no longer functions in the life of the communion. It was set up by Archbishop Rowan following the consultation process, which took place after the meeting of the Joint Standing Committee with the House of Bishops of the Episcopal Church at New Orleans. And its brief was to try and make some assessment of where the Windsor report process had got to in the life of the communion and how it could be carried forward. So what you see in the Windsor Continuation Group report are two major themes: addressing the current situation in the life of the communion and looking towards the future of the life of the communion. On the in the presentation on that the Archbishop gave, he talked people through the recommendations of the report, because the report had been made to him, and it was for the Archbishop of Canterbury to decide how much, if any, of the report would be taken forward and the way in which it would be taken forward. He decided to share the whole of the report with the primates at their meeting in Alexandria, and again with the ACC here in Jamaica. And as he went through the presentation, he used this handout, which I suspect you've all got a copy of, which highlights the resolution, the recommendations from the Windsor Continuation Group report, and includes, where appropriate, the responses of the primates at Alexandria to those recommendations. And the task really is for ACC to add its own reflections in order to aid the Archbishop and the Joint Standing Committee or the Instruments of Communion in their discernment about next steps. There are two sorts of recommendations. Recommendations about the present, that the listening process should continue, that the moratoria is still the best way of halting the tensions in the life of the communion at present, and looking at the possibility of establishing a mechanism in the life of the communion of a rapid response force, a group of people who could go and engage people on the ground with issues of tension in the life of the communion, the so-called pastoral visitors, or the slightly more formal pastoral forum, which is talked about. The Windsor Continuation Group also offered to the Archbishop some reflections on parallel jurisdictions in the light of the formation of the Anglican Church of North America. The other sort of recommendations in the report are about the future of the communion, about the future development of the instruments of communion, and about what the Windsor Continuation Group called the ecclesial deficit of the communion. I would articulate that slightly differently to the way the Archbishop of Canterbury articulated it yesterday. I would say the ecclesial deficit is, how does the Anglican communion make a decision which sticks, which isn't then immediately questioned or open to challenge? Because it seems to me that as a family of 44 autonomous churches, we still really haven't cracked that problem. And that's what a lot of the discussion in the Windsor Continuation Group report is about. I think that's sufficient.
In terms of questions, I think we'll use our normal sort of around-the-table method. May I ask you, please, not to have too many follow-ups, because that disrupts the pattern, and please not to jump in, which is not helpful. Mary Frances? Oh, sorry? Oh, yes, sorry. And if you would please identify who you are and where you're from.
Thank you. Mary Frances Schomburg, Episcopal News Service in New York. You said that this report deals with the current, the current situation and the future life. I guess mine is a question of perspective. The communion's been through times of tension before. The rhetoric 30 years ago over women's ordination sounds a lot like what we're hearing now. There was the instance decades ago of the bishop, whose name suddenly escapes me, brought before the Lambeth Conference to explain his teachings, and the hymn, God of Grace, or For the Living of These Days, comes out of that. Why do these sort of choices need to be made now if they never had to be made during those situations?
Right. Of course, each generation responds to the challenge that it faces in the way in which it seems wisest. So you're not necessarily going to get old patterns reproduced. I think the tension has been particularly acute on this occasion because churches are saying we are no longer sure that we can recognize Christian, authentic Christian discipleship in other churches of the communion. So that the questioning is far deeper and more critical than it has been in the past. And one of the difficulties is, I think, that there's no agreed understanding of what the genius or the spirit of Anglicanism is. That there are a number of groups around the life of the communion, and they all tend to say, we are the bearers of authentic Anglicanism, the bearers of Anglican spirit. And so what the communion is having to do is do a rethink about basics. That's part of what the covenant process is about. It's also what the reflections about the future of the instruments of communion are about. I think what's interesting is that even in the debate about the ordination of women, there was a general sense that the instruments of the communion was the place where business could be done. But people have increasingly questioned that in the current crisis. When business is done at the primates, people often say, oh, this is very prelatical, the primates are overreaching themselves. When business is done at ACC, people say, oh, ACC is too dominated by Western procedures and by the agendas of the North. When business is done at the Lambeth Conference, oh, that's a gathering of bishops, and anyway, their resolutions only have moral authority. When business is done by the Archbishop of Canterbury, oh, we don't want an Anglican Pope. So there's a question about the authority of the instruments of communion, which have to be answered in the current situation.
Thank you.
Tess?
Yeah, I'm Tess Heeson from the Anglican Journal. The recommendation on moratoria talked about relational consequences if they're not held. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the elaboration I think you can find in the Lambeth commentary on the covenant. The Lambeth commentary published by the Covenant Design Group last November explored, when it was talking about the appendix, what relational consequences might look like. It picked up the term, of course, from one of Archbishop Rowan's presidential addresses in the Lambeth Conference, where the Archbishop said, basically, if there is damage to communion, if a church or a see acts in a way which impairs communion, then it is legitimate to think about how that impairment would be formally expressed. The Covenant Design Group took that further, and it sort of did a brainstorm session. And if you look on the relevant page of the Lambeth commentary, and I'm afraid I can't quote it, but you'll see a whole list ranging from, sort of fairly mild things, a rebuke perhaps, through to actual breaking of communion. And the idea is that we need to look at what the appropriate relational consequences might be given any particular damaging of the life of communion. Now, Part of the problem currently in the life of the communion is that that's tended to be done in an ad hoc, uncoordinated way. So in the actions of one province, another province will react by saying, we're breaking communion. A different province may say, no problem, we can live with that. And part of the reason for Section 4 in the Covenant, and you can see here how the Windsor Continuation Group report and the Covenant sort of mesh together, and that's why, of course, they're being considered together by ACC. Part of the rationale behind Section 4 of the Covenant is that when we're faced with that sort of challenge, we need to have ways to respond as a communion and not by a series of, shall we say, freelance initiatives on the part of groups or provinces within the life of the communion.
Not freelance, what's the word after that you used?
Freelance initiatives.
David, to you.
Yes, I want to follow up on the moratoria question too, Geoffrey. Where is the teeth for a moratoria? Even as we speak now, it is being violated in San Joaquin in the Diocese, St. James, Newport Beach, Petaluma, California, and Good Shepherd in the Diocese of Pennsylvania to a high degree of litigation. Right now, the Bishop of Los Angeles is suing a parish and it's not only its rector, but the laity for $6 million to recover legal fees. I mean, it's getting to the point where there's a going from state Supreme Court to the United States Supreme Court, and it seems like you or the ACOC or the Archbishop of Canterbury office is powerless to exercise any moral authority to stop any of this. You talk about moratorium, but where's the teeth? I mean, we're talking about millions of dollars of litigation going on right now. And it's really, it's public knowledge. It's hurting the church like crazy. What have you got to offer these people, these laity, these ordinary Episcopalians are being sued for millions of dollars? I mean, there's got to be something.
Okay. I think I want to answer in three parts, David. The first part is that I would want to draw a distinction between the three moratoria which have tended to be held together. That is a moratorium on the election of a bishop living in a same-gender union, the moratorium on the public authorization of a public right of blessing for same-sex unions, and on cross-provincial interventions. From the very strong request made by the primates for an end to litigation. The second thing I think one would want to say is that I don't think there's any Christian who can be other than aghast when Christians choose to play out their differences through the law courts. It's not an appropriate response. And one should look for ways of reconciliation or even, should we say, reconcile disagreement by routes other than through the courts, if at all possible. The primates asked for this, and they recognised that any disengagement would have to be double-sided, would have to involve a commitment on both sides. And well, the commitment that they asked from TC was that they shouldn't seek to recover property through the courts. And the commitment that they asked from the parishes was that they wouldn't seek to alienate property from the Episcopal Church. Now, I have to say, I don't see either side of that equation heeded in the American situation. However, my third point would be is that my involvement with the panel of reference taught me one thing. And that is, all these situations are hideously more complicated than it appears at one step or two steps remove. What we found in the panel of reference is that when we entered some of these deeply contested situations, the two parties could not even agree on the facts of the case. They could not even give us an account of what was going on that both sides could sign up to. And that means that it's very, very difficult, I think, for any outside force to start adjudicating on exactly what's going on, because there are two often irreconcilable narratives. One of the things I hope that the pastoral visitors might do is that they might be seen as honest brokers in that situation, to start talking down the heat of the situation, to start encouraging people to step back from legal action. But it would be impossible for me, and very foolish of me, to try and attempt to say one side is right, one side is wrong, without having that sort of detailed examination.
Colin, to you and I, can I encourage brevity? We only have about 5 minutes left, so please be brief.
I'll pause in that case.
Okay, Robert?
Bishop Cameron, paragraph 34 of the Windsor Continuation Report says, quote, there is a fourth moratorium requested by the unanimous voice of the Prime Minister Dar es Salaam to see the end of litigation. It does use the term fourth moratorium.
Yes.
In light of this and everything that David just said, why is it that the Windsor Continuation Report's recommendations make no direct mention of the litigation?
Right. I can't answer that question. Perhaps they should have made more of it. And it is part of this curious status that the fourth request has. You do see, as you say, paragraph 34 saying that it should be regarded as a request for a moratorium. But the Windsor report only spoke of three. So it's sort of slightly detached. I think we ought to see a determined attempt to try and restrain litigation. It's not a good way for Christians to conduct their business. And if the communion has got any purchase on the situation, it should use its good offices on both sides. It's not, for me, a one-sided equation. It's got to be an approach to both sides.
Chris?
Given that those who sought to maintain their Anglican identity in fellowship with other provinces, and they've continually expressed their willingness to take part in mediated conversations with all significant partners, as is outlined in the Windsor Continuation Group report. Can you please explain why those who are charged with taking forward those conversations, the pastoral visitors who've already begun their work, have already met together but did not meet with those parties, and when will such a meeting take place?
Right. I can't answer that question because the pastoral visitors report to the Archbishop of Canterbury, and they actually started operating just when I was finishing my work at ACO. I'm not party to the workings of the pastoral visitors scheme or the Archbishop's plans for the mediated conversation. All I can do is reiterate the answer that the Archbishop has given himself, and that is that he is taking steps to carry this work forward. I probed with him and his staff a little bit more about that. It's not for me to reveal any details, it's for the Archbishop, but I am convinced that the matter is being taken seriously and that progress is being made. One of the things that you see in the draft covenant, and I think would be echoed by the Windsor Continuation Group, is that face-to-face meetings are far better than any other form of communication. And part of the reason for the pastoral visitors is to try and establish a pattern of face-to-face encounters. So I'm sure that there will be plans for such conversations to take place, but I'm not party to the details.
Thank you very much for coming, and again, as always, for the clarity of your answers and